Welcome to Wheels Across the West, History and Legacy of the Santa Fe Trail, a production by students at the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri, presented by the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm Elise Milburn, your host for this episode, Trials and Tribulations on the Santa Fe Trail.
Ain't I feeling fine? Everything I'm doing is heavy on my mind. Sugar in my coffee, sugar in my tea, sugar in the dealing when the shipping is free.
In this episode, we will explore how the motivations that drove individual travelers across the West impacted the social dynamic of their travels. The social rank one held on the trail could influence not only how they viewed day-to-day difficulties, but also how they interacted with events that impacted both individuals within their caravans and the caravans as a whole. All of this and more as we get ready to set our wheels across the West.
Some folks don't try so they can't feel. We may be wasting time reinventing the wheel. Some folks take time so they can see. Everything I'm doing so back to me. Some folks get one, some folks get two.
Have you ever been on a road trip and spotted a car on the side of the road with a flat tire or an empty gas tank? The unspoken rules of roadside courtesy lead most road trippers to pull over and offer a hand or even a spare tire. After all, we are all companions out there on the road, even if we aren't traveling in the caravans that our ancestors knew so well. Groups traveling the Santa Fe Trail may not have struggled with flat tires, but they did suffer broken wagons, runaway horses, and even stampedes of buffalo. An account by Dr. Rowland Willard recalled the misfortune of his fellow teamster, who lost all three of his pack horses in a single evening. This loss was heavy, but it pales in comparison to the loss suffered by William Hitt's caravan 3 years later. The group lost the entirety of their horses twice on their return from Santa Fe, and eventually had to complete their journey on foot. Given these accounts, I think I'd rather suffer the modern flat tire. In this episode, we will be looking at the travel diaries and memoirs of Dr. Rowland Willard, Susan Shelby McGoffin, and William Y. Hitt to paint a picture of life on the trail. Each of these individuals traveled the trail under unique circumstances, but not a single one of them traveled alone. Life on the trail meant life in a caravan, which would serve as a tight-knit community during the journey. Together, these groups weathered harsh climates, supply shortages, and a wealth of misfortunes along the trail. Along the way, members documented each step of the journey, leaving behind accounts of lost travelers, new companions, and even hidden gold. Keep a hold of your horses as we get ready to take on the trials and tribulations of the Santa Fe Trail. Our journey begins with the story of William Y. Hitt, a member of the Bryant Party of Traders making the journey from St. Joseph, Missouri to Santa Fe and back again in the year 1828. Hitt's story, as retold here, was compiled into a concise 11 pages by his son. I found this account in the archives at the State Historical Society of Missouri. The Bryant Party consisted of about 35 men, each of them seemingly young and ready for a bit of adventure. The trail was still fairly new, and even the now sprawling Kansas City consisted of, quote, about half a dozen houses, located on as many hills, and was known as Westport Landing, end quote. This was before the days of road maps and easily found travel guides, but the urge to explore was felt far before such comforts came along. The crew began their preparations in early spring, purchasing wagons, horses, and supplies. Oddly enough, Hitt's son did not record exactly what goods the men were planning to sell. Common items may have included furs, but regardless of the goods themselves, the men set out to make a profit. Eager to set on their way, the men first found the landscape to be calm and even picturesque, but soon began to gripe on the less than ideal aspects of the journey. Quote, the wagons were large and cumbersome, each wagon being a load for two good horses, and when loaded with 6 or 8,000 pounds of merchandise, was not so easily transported over the rough, unbroken prairie ground. End quote. When the group stopped to make camp, they found their routines to be as dull as their slow trek across the plains. Quote, each man had his duties assigned him, and he was expected to see that those duties were performed each day. End quote. The caravan was something like a moving job site, where the men would wake up at dawn, work until dusk, and rest before starting the project over again. I imagine these young men must have been questioning where the storied adventures of the West had come from, but they would find their answer soon enough. While their journey may seem slow-going and uneventful, there are elements that challenge our understanding of life on an overland expedition. If you've ever played the Oregon Trail game, you'd know the frustration of trying to trade for medicine or purchase a wagon wheel, as well as the relief of finding a fort or trading town. While this picture is from the northern relative of the Santa Fe Trail, we often suppose that travel was similar going south. In reality, in the early years of the Santa Fe trade, decades before the Oregon Trail opened up, you were more likely to come across a herd of buffalo than you were to find a conveniently placed trading post. Goods had to be purchased up front, and you'd best avoid being stingy with your supplies if a member of your caravan is in need. After all, the goal was to get the entire caravan and its merchandise to Santa Fe, not just one measly little wagon. For early travelers like William Hitt, traveling was an investment, and it often did not guarantee a return. The Bryant Company likely knew this going into their adventure, but they certainly did not expect that it might happen to them. The trials came quickly and without warning. While the men were nearing the middle of their long trek home, a nearby group of Native Americans ran their horses off. Without horses, the journey homewards would have been far longer, with starvation as the greatest risk. Hitt's account gives little indication to the emotions the men were feeling at this time. If they were afraid, their fears would be short-lived. The same group offered to sell the horses back to them for a meager sum of gold. The men paid up, buying themselves more than just their horses. They bought themselves time. They were 300 miles from Santa Fe. There was no conveniently placed outpost in the early 1800s, nor had towns grown to any significant size along the trail. The gold that the men had so desperately sought had put a target on their backs. Hitt noted that this far along the trail, the money, quote, was more of a burden than a comfort, for with its abundance, they could neither employ transportation nor buy a meal's victuals, end quote. It wasn't long before this gold brought misfortune to the Bryant party once again. The scouting party of the natives returned, driving off the horses for a second time. This time around, they also went for the gold. The party was attacked, their horses were gone, and they had little left with which to defend their wagon of treasure. The men were alone, in the dark, and likely afraid. It is impossible to know the full truth of the altercation that night, but we do know this. When the sun arose the following morning, the men were still alive. Their wagon of gold and provisions was all that they'd been left with. Hitt's account of this adventure may sound far-fetched, and it is likely that he glorified himself in the magnification of some details. Regardless, there is one thing we know for certain. Quote, the next morning, finding further delay useless, such supplies most needful and best suited to their changed circumstances were selected. Each man loaded to his utmost strength, they were ready to commence their long journey home on foot. End quote. The men burned the remainder of their goods, including both excess food and their wagons, in order to prevent potential usage by the tribe they had recently encountered. Their gold was a different story. Rather than leave it in the burning wreckage of their expedition, the company buried it on Chateau's Island in Kearney County. The amount was about $10,000. They were a 2 weeks walk from the nearest settlement. Hitt and his companions continued for 2 weeks on foot, eventually leaving behind weaker members in order to send a group ahead to Independence, Missouri, to find horses. These men, exhausted and near starving, returned for their companions. Every member present at the attack made it safely home. A portion of the group, not including Hitt, returned to reclaim the silver and gold the following spring. These men would be under the protection of the 1st Military Escort along the Santa Fe Trail. Hitt's group learned that the trail was fraught with difficulties, and money was no guarantee of safety. The group worked together, and eventually every man returned safely. But their journey on foot would leave them as little more than skeletons. Hungry, weathered, and without the mules that were so often tied to survival on the trail. Unlike William Hitt, Dr. Rowland Willard was not a merchant, nor did he fit the stereotypical model of a man in the West. He practiced medicine and was hoping to find opportunity and wealth in Santa Fe. Willard had actually traveled the trail in 1825, 3 years prior to the unfortunate journey undertaken by Hitt. While his motivations and experiences were different, Willard encountered many of the same misfortunes. Adventure was not new to Dr. Willard, and neither was a change in scenery. Willard made his start in the world as a carpenter, but poor economic conditions dried up his prospects for work. Soon, he found himself moving westward to begin an apprenticeship in medicine. Newly founded trading towns in the West were growing, and the demand was high for the comforts of medicine. For Willard, this was an opportunity to make a life for himself. Later, Dr. Willard was ready to leave his apprenticeship and strike out with his own practice, and he saw the greatest opportunity in Mexico. The young country had earned its independence, but in turn it had lost the inflow of supplies from Spain. Medicine had become a commodity that few could provide. Ready for a new opportunity, Dr. Willard packed up his life once more and prepared to undertake his biggest journey yet. His journey over the Santa Fe Trail to Mexico. Although not an inexperienced traveler, Willard had never undertaken anything as strenuous as a journey across the great American Southwest. Despite his unique occupation, Willard traveled the Santa Fe Trail with a caravan of merchants. His group consisted of about 90 men and 30 wagons, making for a large group of uniquely situated travelers. Willard's journal does not clarify the goals of his companions, but he does make evident a number of disagreements between merchant partners on the trail. Willard himself had packed light. He brought only his medicine bags, a few pounds of food, and a pack horse for the journey. He planned to make his fortune off of his medical knowledge, not from trading merchandise. This placed Willard in a rather unique position. He had no allegiance to a particular company aside from the benefits of traveling with a large group, and he had few belongings to protect beyond his person and his horse. This may have made Willard's life seem fairly easy on the trail, but horses can be rather fickle travel companions. Willard traveled with the packers of the caravan. These individuals rode on their horses in front of the wagons and typically were engaged in hunting and finding camp for the remainder of the group. Packers with more than one horse were at an especially high risk of losing their horses and, subsequently, their supplies. Less than 2 weeks into the journey, Willard learned this through the experience of one of his companions, Mr. Fulcher. A fellow packer, Fulcher had spread his supplies between three pack horses for the journey. While undeniably useful, horses were also expensive and prone to spooking. When the hunting members of the party accidentally spooked an entire herd of buffalo in the direction of their caravan, the horses were the first to run, with or without their owners. Quote, as they, the buffalo, passed in front, six pack horses broke from the ranks, fell in with the buffalo, and went off in full speed, end quote. Half a dozen riders went after the horses, managing to capture all but three. Quote, these three horses were the property of one man and had on them all his goods and $300, provisions, and most of his clothing, end quote. The stampede had left Mr. Fulcher with nothing but the clothes on his back. This caravan was composed of a handful of independent traders, and so the loss of one member's goods was felt far more intensely than it would have been for the merchant company of Hitt. Regardless, the trail was a place of companionship, and no one was left to suffer on their own. The party searched for the horses for days, with Dr. Willard leading the charge. When the horses could not be found, the group furnished a new horse and enough money to cover a portion of the losses. After all, they understood the dangers of the trail, and it could very well be their own horses in the next week. Unlike the merchants he traveled with, Willard had little stake in getting goods to Santa Fe and back. This also means that the company had little reason to bring Willard along with them unless he could pull his own weight. The notations in Willard's diary make it evident that he was often assigned to help hunt for the group, to stay up on night watch, or even to track down the lost horses of his companions. When his companion lost his hat to the winds of the trail, it was Willard that supplied him with a new one. Hunting and staying up late on watch was one thing, but proving to be a valuable member of the caravan was another thing entirely. What separated Willard from the other members of the caravan was his medical training, which he often offered in exchange of money when possible. Willard is best known for treating Hugh Glass, the famous mountain man that survived a grizzly attack. In situations like these, Willard found that his services, both along the trail and in Mexico, were often trade and barter rather than cash-based. Unfortunately for Willard, he found that trading services in Mexico rarely resulted in the wagon of gold that merchants like Hitt acquired by trading in merchandise. Dr. Rowland Willard was by no means a weathered explorer or an expert huntsman, but he did not need to be. The trail offered opportunity to more than just merchants and guidemen. Every individual sets foot on the trail with their own motives, and these motives do impact their overall experiences and outlook. Willard was looking to make money in Mexico as a physician, but he also recognized that his move would require investment, and that he would need to contribute to his caravan utilizing the skills that he had. He offered up medical treatment, filling a role that many caravans sorely lacked. In this way, Willard not only earned his spot on the trail, but by helping his fellow packers, he ensured that he would receive similar help when he needed it. After all, the trail was no single-player game. To survive was to work together. Here, we turn to our youngest trailblazer, Susan Shelby McGoffin. Unlike our more seasoned adventurers, McGoffin was only 18 when she first set foot on the trail. She was traveling with her husband, Samuel McGoffin, whom she lovingly referred to as Mi Alma, or My Soul. They were off on a trading expedition to Mexico, where they would live for nearly 2 years after their initial journey. The McGoffins were wealthy, and their journey across the West was vastly more comfortable than that of William Hitt or Dr. Rowland Willard. They brought a maid, paid servants, and a number of farm animals with them, all of which were tended by the women and men they brought along with them. Today, I am joined by another member of the Santa Fe Trail team, Abby Ramirez. How are you today, Abby?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for asking.
Thank you for joining us. I know your research also involved McGoffin, and I understand that she was a pretty interesting woman. Can you tell us a bit about her?
Of course. What makes McGoffin such an interesting case study is the meticulous journals that she kept of her experiences.
One thing that stood out to me the most was the fact that unlike our other trailblazers, McGoffin describes many concerns in a very distant manner. For example, if the horses or oxen are lost, she'll describe it as occupying her husband's servants, but she never really voices concern in things that affect her. Why do you think this is?
That's true, but you have to keep in mind who McGoffin was. She was exceptionally young, newly married to a wealthy merchant, and experiencing life on the trail for the very first time. She was often concerned or afraid of what she perceived to be physical threats, like wolves, but her fortune and livelihood was not on the forefront of her mind.
So what made McGoffin's experience so different from that of Dr. Rowland Willard or William Hitt? Surely she still experienced the same hardships.
Yes, she definitely experienced life on the trail just as fully as everyone else. She noted a number of thunderstorms, swarms of mosquitoes, dangerously close wolves, and other incidents. These are the things she was more likely to comment on because these were her personal struggles. Hitt and Willard were undeniably intertwined with the finances and social politics of their caravans, whereas McGoffin acted independently of these things.
If I recall, you explored this agency further in your own research of women on the trail. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Well, I guess our listeners will have to tune in for that episode as well. Well, thank you for joining us, Abby, and thank you for helping us understand McGoffin and her role on the trail.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
Abby makes a wonderful point as to why McGoffin's experiences were so unique. They are a direct reflection of the factors that drove her onto the trail, many of which were out of her control. She was part of her husband's trading caravan, an enterprise that supported her but did not necessarily include her in its business dealings. Her time on the trail was not a matter of making money or pursuing a potential career in the West. Instead, she was making a life in an environment that was entirely foreign to her. Her journals are filled with notes on the scenery, people, and even terminology of the trail. She documented her experiences more faithfully and fully than both William Hitt and Dr. Rowland Willard, leaving historians with a vital picture of life and community on the Santa Fe Trail. We also can glimpse a fuller picture of day-to-day struggles through McGoffin's account. Broken wagon wheels, mud, loss of oxen, and storms were all challenges that could greatly slow down a caravan. Members of the caravan that were hired hands, like William Hitt, would be the first to respond and even solve these issues. Associated or guest travelers like Dr. Willard would also frequently pitch in, supporting the main caravan with the hopes of being supported in turn. Together, these stories create a picture of social hierarchies on the trail, particularly in the face of misfortunes. The existence of communities along the trail did not make independent experiences identical or even predictable. Different travelers had unique motivations that inspired their journeys and altered the ways that they experienced similar difficulties. The misfortunes of the trail were suffered by all who traveled, though they were not always distributed evenly. These three trailblazers understood that on the trail they were members of a caravan. While caravans of a joint business like Hitt's may have had a more communal outlook, the caravans of Dr. Willard and McGoffin also assigned roles to hunt for the group as a whole and offered up supplies to companions in need. The trail could be dangerous, but these dangers would only be exacerbated if one attempted to go it alone. The Santa Fe Trail was filled with trials and tribulations, but it was also a place for camaraderie and companionship. After all, regardless of their troubles, each of our trailblazers had their own motivations for setting their wheels across the West. This episode of Wheels Across the West was written and narrated by me, Elise Milburn. Our producer and engineer is Kyle Jackson, and our executive producer is Jay Sexton, director of the Kinder Institute at the University of Missouri. This podcast is recorded at KBIA Studios in Columbia, Missouri, and distributed in partnership with the Missouri Humanities Council. Never been better, I've never been worse. I've been up, I've been down, I've been lost, I've been found, I am so gosh darn confused.
important. Why don't you tell me the news?